Three Jungle Tales, all on the sports objective. Between now and opening day, we will talk to 23 former Pirate baseball players about their path to East Carolina, their time in the purple and gold, and what they're up to now. Now let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome into 23 Jungle Tales right here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by PGXGloves.com. Bubba, very excited to have Mark Minakazi, who is part of the Pirate Baseball family, and I'm very excited to have him as a sponsor of 23 Jungle Tales. If we look back at careers of coaches and players from the past, and certainly they're very important to us. And Bubba, very excited to have a Williamston native here with us. That's very exciting.
Yeah, I knew you'd be fired up about having a Williamson native on. This Absolutely. Guy played for Williamson back in the 70s and came to East Carolina. And welcome into the program, Butch Davis.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here with you.
Very excited to talk to a fellow Tiger. And then it's not every day. I mean, think about it, Bubba. It's not every day that you have a fellow Tiger and a fellow Pirate. It's usually the high schools, you didn't have, they went to Williamson, then they went to another school, or they went to another school and then they became a Pirate. So to have a Tiger and a Pirate, I mean, I need to play the lottery tonight for sure. Butch, great, very glad to have you on. And speaking of Williamson, how did you get recruited to East Carolina? Can you talk about your path from Williamson to, I guess, down 903 to Greenville?
Yeah. Well, I was in Williamson, and after leaving Williamson, I went to St. Augustine in Raleigh for 1 year, and then I transferred over to East Carolina, and that's how I got there. I mean, it was a pleasure getting a chance to play with some pretty nice ball players there.
No question about it. When you look at back then, so when you were coaching, who was your coach? Was it Dink Mills for baseball back then?
Yes, it was. My junior high school coach was Johnny Hollison, and then my varsity coach was Dink Mill and Harold Robinson.
Oh, H-Rob, he's a friend of the program, and Bubba, a guy that likes to have a good time. We love H-Rob, and Coach Robinson is very close. By the way, for the Williamson family, we lost, I was telling you, Butch, a guy that came after you were, by the time you were in East Carolina, Coach Mike Burrell, who was my baseball coach, passed away 2 days ago. So I want to give condolences to his family. And he's the one I always tell the story about. When you get tired of losing, you'll find a way to win. We lost two conference games. One to John Holmes in Edenton was the second one that we shouldn't have lost, and we did. So he made us run more than we ever wanted to run. And very sad. We're going to miss Coach Mike Burrell. Rest in peace. And I know with Williamson, people may not know, but Williamson has a really big baseball tradition.
Yeah, they do, because even the years when I was there, I know we won the state championship 75 and 76. Because I have a very unique story, and that is, when I was a junior, I didn't start right away. I was sitting on the bench, and I never forget. We went to run on rapids to play, and Harold Robinson actually told he asked Dink Mills, "Listen, why don't you give Butch a chance to start?" And Dink looked at him and said, "Why?" He said, "Well, just give him a chance and just see what can he do." And so he started me, and from that day on, he never took me out the lineup.
Wow. So what was what position did you play?
Outfielder.
So your speed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because of my speed, and I can run, and I can hit a little bit.
No question. So you went to Augustine. What brought you to what made you transfer from St. Augs to Greenville?
I think what made me transfer was because I wanted to play just a little bit more better baseball. Because when I went to St. Augustine, I did pretty good. I didn't expect to do that well because, I love baseball, but I also love basketball. And, I played all sports in school, and I guess, baseball happened to be the best of the three. And so I got recruited to St. Augustine, and then after my freshman year, I ended up going to East Carolina. I remember the dentist there by the name of Dr. Marshburn. You know, he followed my career out of high school. And after my freshman year of St. Al, he asked me, you know, have I thought about transferring? I said, it would be nice. So he said, let me make some calls and, you know, check around and see. So he ended up calling East Carolina. At the time, it was Monty Little. He was the head coach there, along with, you know, Hal Beard and also Gary Overton. And so they called and I went over it and I talked with them, and then they offered me, they told me, well, if I want one transfer, come on over. And I did.
Well, that's certainly a lot of fun, and we're glad that you did. So cool to have a Tiger and a Pirate. Can't say that enough. But what about, talk about your career. I know that at East Carolina, you get to Greenville. I know you being a Williamson kid, it's not like you have the element of surprise of Greenville, because it's so far, it's not but 26 miles away. So it's not like it's several hundred miles away, or you're in the state of Florida coming to Greenville. It's pretty much in our backyard.
Yeah, it is. And it was even better because I was a lot closer to home. And plus, you know, my family and friends, they got a chance to come out and see me play. It was enjoyable. I think about some of the time that we played when I played there with some of the players. And you know, I think the one thing that we did well, I think that we gelled together as a team. And you know, the chemistry was good. And I learned over the years that if you have the chemistry as a team, you can win a lot of games, because it seems like you're all on the same page.
Hey, Bubba, I know that Bubba always gives me a hard time. He's like, hey, Bubba, we'll get back to baseball in a second, but you always say, are you kidding me? If I lived so close, if I lived in Williamson, I would be in everything in East Carolina. I was like, I wish I could. Like, I wish my schedule permitted that. But he always says, are you kidding me? I love East Carolina so much. And I do feel guilty, Bubba, on those football games or baseball or basketball when I'm driving home. And poor Bubba and his family drive like 3.5 hours each way. And I've got like a 40, 45-minute drive.
Oh, yeah. It's a short ride, I tell you that. It's a real short ride, and I love it.
Butch, tell us about Coach Little. You know, I know we're going to have Coach Baird, who you played for your senior season, and we're going to have him on, and Billy Bell.
Yeah, well,
in this series here a few weeks back, and Billy's connecting us with Coach Baird. But tell us about Coach Monty Little.
He was, he recruited me in, you know, and he gave me opportunity to play. And I appreciate that. You know, he was a hard worker. I know there were days that we had to practice in the snow. I tell you that. I know he made us go out and do that. So, you know, he loved the game. He did. He loved the game, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing for him for 2 years, which I did. And then in my senior season, I played up on the Hal Beard after that.
And the base, speaking of baseball, and then after Baird, with by the time I got to East Carolina in the 90s, obviously in the 80s, when I know when Coach O took over, he was like my coach, even though I wasn't playing when I was there. But baseball in East Carolina, I tell that all the time. People don't realize, and obviously, you know, I bleed purple and gold. It could be tiddlywinks, and I'm going to be pulling for that sport. But everybody talks about the football program, but the baseball program, man, so many great players. So many great coaches have come through Greenville over the years. It's just it's kind of overwhelming at times to think about all the talent we've had, if it's coaching or playing.
Yeah, I agree, because I know my senior season with Coach Beer there, it was a gem. I guess also because, you know, we had a lot of seniors too, and one thing Coach Beer did that I really love, that I carry with me to today, is that you know, he was always honest with you. That's one thing I appreciate about him. And he just let us play. And he told us that, listen, if you make mistakes, don't worry about it. You know, even if I pull you out the game one day, but the following day, and you'll be back in there. And he was really, really easy to play for. And another thing is, you know, by being a hitter, if scouts would come in and watch us play, and we'd be taking batting practice. I tell you what, you talking about some of the best BP thrower. He would just lay it right there, and you would just be shining, you'd be smiling because you know the way he just laid it in there. It was great.
So talk about that transition that you were making from St. Augustine's to East Carolina prior to that 1978 season. What was that move like going to Division I baseball?
It was pretty easy, really. Not knowing what to expect, it's no more than probably I would say I knew that I was going to face some better baseball, and I look forward to doing that, and plus going in, and the players, they made it easy. They had accepted me right away, and the coaching staff there was great. Like I said, with Coach Overton there, he was great. I mean, I saw him about maybe 4 months ago, I think it was, and because we all got together after so many years, and Coach Beard, like I said, he was there also. So, you know, he made things easy. And it was just one of the transition whereby when you walk in and, you know, and you felt right at home.
How much pride did you have, Butch, being we're talking about the local factor? But to me, I consider Williamson, like I said, 40, 45 minutes away. How much pride did you have putting on that purple and gold, knowing you're like a local kid? When they could be recruiting kids all across the country, but they pick you. Do you have more sense of pride knowing that you're a local kid playing for the Pirates?
Yeah, I did. Just like you said, by being so close to home, and then plus, you know, when you get there, there's a lot of other kids also that were from Williamson as well there, but they probably wasn't playing sports at the time. And I was probably one of the only one from Williamson at the time, but I knew we had a quarterback out of Williamson that also played football there. I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, he was starting Mike quarterback Weaver. There. Mike, the there Dream you go. Weaver. Yes, he was. He was from there, and I tell you what, and it made it so much easier for me because knowing that I had someone else there that was from Williamson that was also doing good, so I knew that by me coming there, I had to bring my game up. I just had to be the best that I can be because I want to be part of the elite, one of the elite players that are leaving out of Williamson. And so I can show them what I can do.
So Butch, when did you realize that you, obviously that senior season, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, was played for Coach Hal Baird. And after that season, you were drafted in the 11th round by the Kansas City Royals, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But I know you had a tremendous senior season, batting well over 300, and you led the team in home runs and also RBIs. So what are your memories of that 1980 season, when East Carolina went to the NCAA tournament?
What I remember most, I guess, like I said, you know, I probably wouldn't have been as good as I was if it wasn't for the other players on the team. Because, like I said, we had I want to say about maybe 7 seniors. So it was no pressure on me because if you threw around me, you had a couple more players. Billy Best was there at the time. And Raymond Steins was also there as a hitter. So we had – and Macon Moy, we had a team of guys – that could swing the bat. So if you more so threw around me, then you had to face them. So it made it easier when you have more than just one guy on the team that can hit, and you got 2 and 3 guys that can hit. It make it tough for you. And so I guess that's one of the reasons, you know, it became easier because you know if I didn't do the job, someone else did it too. And so it made it tough for the opposition to just start throwing around you. And I guess that was the best thing that I've learned. You know, when you got chemistry and then you got a bunch of hitters around you that can hit as well, it make your job so much easier.
Yeah, we need to get Ramey Steins on the program. Oh, yeah. I told you we've had Billy Best on. He was an excellent storyteller and a tremendous interview. But Ramey Steins is a very nice guy as well. I knew he had been an excellent player for the Pirates, as you said. And, you know, he spent years and years officiating ACC basketball as well as others.
Yep, he sure have.
He's done very well. And you were talking about that very fact of team chemistry and the like, and it just amazes me. Going through, you're talking about the order of the lineup. Some of these guys, it's like, you know, what do you like? They pick your poison, just like you were talking about. You know, you pitch around these guys, and next thing you know, I guess you start pitching around a guy. Next thing you know, you're down 3 or 4 nothing quick, right?
That's it, absolutely. And because you know, it was no pressure on you. You were able to just go out there and relax and have fun.
And I guess with the fact that Coach Little, Baird, and then obviously on down the line, these coaches have done a nice job. We'll talk about player development. But player development, and then they had the recruiting, because you got to have the players, but you guys had a lot of depth on that team, right, in 80?
Yeah, we did a lot. We really, really did. And they all came out to play, and they all did well. It was just like a family affair, really.
Back in 1980, obviously much different situation as far as the venue, but there at Harrington Field, I know it could still get rowdy at times, you know, especially those big in-state games against the Tar Heels or NC State, UNC Wilmington, or what have you. So tell us about the jungle back in 1980 under the white pines dripping sap on you.
Well, you know, I tell you what, I think some of our best games, I know it was against Carolina and North Carolina State, because, you know, I guess they was our two biggest rivalry. But, because when you play them, you had to bring your best game, because there was no soul league in, you know, with the Tar Heels or the Woodpeck. And we just wanted to show the ACC, you know, that we can play caliber baseball against them, and we did.
No doubt about it. I mean, you look at East Carolina. There's no question with American, but East Carolina certainly is a. People say this all the time, but a Power Five program. When you look at right now, I think Butch were ranked 13th. I believe Bubba is the highest. I can't remember all the polls run together, but 13th is the highest. But I think it's fair to say that Cliff Godwin has a top 15 program every year.
Yeah, he did. Because I mean, I didn't follow it much, but I know that he did, because Mike Wright was, you know, when he was there, he was, you know, when he got drafted, he came out and was talking about it. And he talked about the program that they had, man. Plus Billy Best, he always kept me updated too, because you know, he used to go back in there and scout, and then I may run across him, or I call him, or he call me, and then we'll start talking about the program. You tell him how well they was doing. I said, yeah. I said, I don't follow it much, but I do get some updates, because they had a photographer that was, well, we called him, he said his name was Doc. He was out of Delmarva, but anyway, I used to see him all the time in spring training, and he always give me a update about the program, how well they're doing, and I definitely appreciate that. Appreciate him doing that for me. And then if I had any questions, I always call Billy. He would always fill me in as well.
Butch, talk about that very thing of your playing career, and then with East Carolina, and then you move on to the majors. How great a feeling is that? As a kid, I come from a baseball family. I didn't have the talent, obviously, that you guys have that have made it. But what's it like to go from East Carolina, and then I take it you get drafted? What's that feeling like when you found out that you're going to the big league, so to speak?
You know, it's very humble, and I was static. It's something that, you know, once you get drafted, and you just hope that one day, you know, you would get opportunity to play in the major leagues. And I wasn't sure, you know, when you're playing, you're not really sure if you're going to make it or not. But you know, one thing, that if you get out there and give it your all, and you hustle and you play hard and you play the game right, the opportunity might show up, and it did. And when that call came, I was like, you know, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I just couldn't, because I was enjoying the game. I was just having fun. One thing I learned to do is not to put a lot of pressure on myself. I learned not to do that. I just go out there and play, have fun, and let the chips fall where they may. And during that time, and plus, you know, we had other players that during that time that I could relate to or that I can talk to about certain things, and they didn't mind sharing knowledge with you. And that also helped me out a lot, too, because we didn't have as many coaches as they do now. And so we had to rely a lot on our teammates, some of the older guys there, and they would give you some little tidbits here and there. So when I got the call to the big leagues, just to get there and walk in the locker room, and because you know when I first got to big league, I mean, they had Frank White and George Brett, Willie Wilson, Amos Otis, you know, and even believe it or not, Gaylord Perry was there when I was there. So I got a chance to play with Gaylord Perry his last year in Kansas City.
Wow.
Yeah. So and that was special.
Hey, two major leaguers playing from a town that has 5,000 people. I mean, something like that. I mean, it's incredible. And then, of course, his brother Jim was good as well. In Kansas City back then, as a kid, I was about 9, 10, 11 when they were really, really good back at that time. So that's incredible that you had the opportunity to play with them. And the Pine Tar bat with George Brett back in the 80s. That's one of the most classic, iconic videos of all time, seeing him run out of that dugout.
Yeah, it was, you know, because I joined the club after that. I think I think that incident might have happened. I want to say maybe in July, and I joined the club in August, late August.
Okay.
And that's what they were always talking about, and I'm like, okay, but I was just I guess starstruck just by being there. I mean, it was like, you know, from Williamson, here I am, another ball player from Williamson made it. I knew Gaylord Perry and Jim Perry. I knew of them two. And then all of a sudden, here go Butch Davis. I'm thinking like, whoo, this is really something.
It was really cool, Bubba. I'll say this real fast and pitch it to you. Gaylord played for like a million teams. Of course, he's a Hall of Famer. But he had a jersey. It was really cool, Bubba. I don't know if you've ever seen it with all the – I forgot how many clubs he played for, but every single club, he had a patch on it because people kept saying, who did you play for? And he's like, well, you know, like I've got the jersey on right here. But I always thought that was cool. But the good thing about that, Butch, is that if he has all those patches, that means he had a Hall of Fame career, because if not, he would not have had all those patches. all those clubs.
Absolutely.
Now, Butch, I know I'm going to put you on the spot with this, but just a few questions just about your career in general with the big leagues. Do you remember who was your first game against? And you know, where was it played, which stadium? And also, you know, do you remember your first hit and also your first home run?
My first hit was in Kansas City against the White Sox by a pitcher named Dick Tedrow. I got my first hit RBI off him. My first home run off, what I know you're going to ask that question. I'm trying to think here. Guy by the name of Jay Pettibone. I want to say Jay Pettibone from Minnesota Twins.
I guess Bubba's the.
Trying to think. Was another question go along with that?
He was just talking about the stadium. So you're...
No, the stadium was the stadium. Kansas City was the Kansas City. I can't think of the name stadium in Kansas City. Then Minnesota, it was the Metrodome.
Yep, and then in Kansas City, I guess it was what, Kauffman Stadium back then.
Kauffman Stadium. There you go. Yeah, Kauffman Stadium.
It had the waterfall on the center field, right? I love that. That's one thing that I miss about the stadiums from back in the day. There was a lot of older stadiums, like with Tiger Stadium, you know, with, you have like, I mean, that was so iconic. And then you have all the, you know, of course, with still with Fenway and Wrigley now, but there's a lot of stadiums like that that you miss out now, because it seems like everything is so modernized or cookie cutter now compared to what it used to be.
Yeah. What was your favorite venue to play in?
You know, to be honest, as long as I was in the major leagues, it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Now I'm trying to think as far as obviously the Royals. I know you also played with the Rangers. Which other teams do you play with in the big leagues? Did you play strictly in the AL or did you play in NL?
I play for the Pirates also in the big league. Okay. I also play for the Dodgers also in the big league. Okay,
so you got the opportunity to play at Wrigley.
Yes, I played at Wrigley. Sure did. And that was a nice old ballpark, historical. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I had the opportunity to go there. I guess it's my 13th birthday. That was a lot of fun.
Because I got my first nationally hit. In Wrigley.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We saw them play not to get off on a tangent, but it was, of course, I want to say Sandberg was still playing. You had Sammy playing in right. And then they were playing the Montreal Expos when they had Larry Walker and Marquise Grissom.
Yeah, they're going way back there. Yeah. Matter of fact, I had a buddy of mine. Also was drafted by Kansas City along with myself. He was a bullpen coach for the Cubs for the past 9 years.
Okay. Now, who were some of the top pitchers? I know you mentioned the pitcher that you had gotten your first hit off, but you know who were some of the top guys that you had the opportunity to face? In terms of pitchers, but then also who were some of the top guys that you had the opportunity to play against?
Well, I'll tell you what, then Ron Guidry. I tell you what, I got two home runs against him. I got him one time in New York, and I hit another one in Kauffman Stadium. The one pitcher that killed me was Tommy John. I knew what was coming because you knew we could throw it away and I would stay back long enough and just hit it. When I hit it right dead at second base every single time. It didn't matter because he just had my number. But Ron Guidry, I got him twice. Yep.
Now I'm trying to think back. Were you teammates with Charlie Huff?
No.
Okay. No, because I knew you like. Like I mentioned, I knew you were with the Rangers. I couldn't remember if your years overlapped with his.
No, I was with Nolan Ryan his last year.
Nice, yeah. Tell us about the strikeout king. Do you have any good Nolan Ryan stories?
No, the one thing that really impressed me about Nolan Ryan was that. It didn't matter what time, like, you know, we used to get in the morning sometime about maybe 2:30 in the morning traveling on the road and there'd be people out sitting out there waiting on him. And, you know, he didn't stop right then to sign an autograph. But the very next day, if the bus would leave around about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he would go out there at least a half an hour before anybody get out there and start signing an autograph. And anytime you ask him for an autograph, that's one thing he did do that I really, really appreciated. That he would take the time to do it because, you know, by him being a strikeout king, you know, a lot of time, you know, the demands for him was such a great demand, but he still took the time to sign an autograph. And I really appreciate it about him.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear that he was that way because so many guys, I don't know, and you get it to an extent because, you know, you're getting all the time, but at the same time, you just got to try to keep it in the proper perspective. Obviously, would not know what that's like, but I would hope that if I was in that situation that I would have been able to keep it in the proper perspective and like Nolan Ryan, you know, do what's right for the kids and fans of the game.
Yeah, you know, he really did, and I just used to just sit and watch because I seen there another time, you know, when because you knew what would happen was that you know, with the little kids up there trying to get an autograph, but then the old adults, they would just go up there and just knock them out the way, and you know, and once he saw that, you know, he just, you know, no, he was signed the little kids autograph for them. But he was, tell you what though, he was a classy gentleman. really was, and I really appreciated about him.
Which managers did you have the opportunity to play for?
Dick Houser, Tommy Lasorda, Jim Leland, Kevin Kennedy with the Rangers. Then was a four with another man. I mean, big leagues. And Frank Robinson with the Orioles.
Nice, some big names there.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, let me start with Jim Leland. I remember, and obviously, there are a few things that come to mind about Jim Leland. I mean, he's had success pretty much any club that he's been with. But the thing I recall about Jim Leland, you know, growing up a Braves fan, when the Braves and Pirates would be playing, and Jim Leland would be hiding his smoke in the dugout.
Yep, that's him.
You'd see him over in the corner of the dugout. It was hilarious.
That's him. That's him. Absolutely. But you know, he was good too. He was, you know, because I've seen him over the past years. You know, he's always come down to because you know he works with the Tigers, and our paths was always crossed with him, and I always go up there to him, talk to him, speak to him. He's a very, very nice gentleman.
And then back in those days, the L.A. Dodgers were in the same division as the Atlanta Braves, the NL West, which made a lot of sense. But so just talk about any good Tommy Lasorda stories.
No, I got a chance. I went up with them, and I stayed about, maybe 10 days with them, and I didn't get a chance to really get a chance to know him that well. No, I saw him in spring training. I was in camp with them. They always talked about Tommy, you know, and his pasta, you know, his, you know, he loved pasta. So
yeah,
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. But other than that, that was it. I didn't get a chance to really be around him a whole lot.
So Butch, after your playing days were through, talk about the transition into coaching. Is that something that kind of materialized as time went on, or is that something that you knew even while you're still playing, hey, when I hang up the cleats, I want to coach?
It is. I knew that, you know, when I finished playing baseball, that I finished playing the game of baseball, that I knew that I wanted to coach. And my last year in playing was in 94. And that's when they had a strike. And I was home because I was going to, you know, just wait until the strike was over. Then I was going to go back and play again. But the Orioles called me. The assistant farm director at the time was Don Buford, and the head farm director was Sid Thrift. And they called me and asked me what I plan on doing. Did I go back and play, or have I thought about coaching? And I told him, I said, well, I'd like to coach one day. And I said, well, and the guy mentioned, well, then, so what about now? I said, well, I tell you what, you want to just, you know, give me an offer. Let me know what you're talking about. And I discussed it with my wife, and I did. And I got back with him. I told him that let me go into coaching, because I knew with the strike coming in, it was going to be a little while before they even settled that. And I was up in age too. And I said, well, let me go ahead on and start my coaching career. And that's what I did.
And I know you did that an awfully long time. Earlier pre-show, before we went live, you were talking about, you know, hanging it up and enjoying retirement. But just talk about, I guess, what you did that for nearly 25 years or so. So just talk about coaching and some of the stops you made and places you coached.
I spent come out being 23 years and 7 months with the Orioles. I would say 24 years, but I've traveled, I managed, I was hitting coach. I was a roving outfield instructor for 7 years. I managed for 3 years. And so the other 14 years I spent as a hitting coach. Then I was very fortunate enough whereby I got opportunity to go and coach with the Minnesota Twins for the big league club, the first base coach under Paul Molitor. And that was outstanding. That was, I don't know. But anyway, it was such a thrill just to get opportunity to go and coach some major league ball players, just be up there with them, just to see how much talent they really have, and see how well they can play, and see how fast the game is, and I just I loved it. I really had a wonderful time coaching for the 2 years with the Minnesota Twins.
What years were those?
That was in 15 and 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Butch, I had a question as far as when we talk about making, obviously, minor leagues to major leagues. What's the difference from going from, say, single-A ball to – how much of a difference is it from single-A ball to making the show?
It's a big difference, you know, and I tell guys this all the time, and I truly mean it. And I said, listen, I said, you all have the ability, the physical ability to play in the big leagues, but I think that what separates them is the mental part of the game, because the game gets so much faster. The game gets really quick. You have to be able to think. You got to be able to think just like that. And that's what I see. Even guys in the big league, you hear people saying, well, I don't see why come he's still in the big leagues. I tell you why he's still in the big leagues, because he can think on his feet real quick. The mental part of the game he has. He has some physical ability to play it also. But there are players in the minor league system that have just as much physical ability than guys in the major league, but they don't have the knowledge. They can't. They aren't quite seasoned yet. That when they get there, you got to be able to make a decision quickly. When it happened, you got to be on it now. You can't just sit back and think about it. It's too late. That's how fast the game gets.
And that very fast, that very fact, I was going to ask about fundamentals, as far as fundamentals of the game. How young? I know Bubba and I have boys about the same age. His boy is a little bit older, about a year and a half, I think, older than mine. But you're getting to now where my son, unfortunately, because of the COVID year, he's already missed one season, maybe two. He's missed Farm League is where he was doing. He got a year ahead, but actually now he's going to be just on par. I guess it's last year Farm League. But how far back do the kids need to go, and as far as being fundamentally sound to make it in the majors? Is this something that you can start in your middle school? Or do you think it really starts way, way back to Little League?
I tell you what, the quicker they can get it, the better. Because I know that a friend of mine's here in Raleigh, he has he worked some kids 13 years old, and he wanted me to go out there and just like look at them and just watch them play a little bit. And they're 13 years old, and they have I'm not being negative about it. I'm just saying the fundamental skill that they have is lacking. It's lacking, and I can say this because I've seen some of this also in when I was coaching. I've seen kids come out of high school, come out of college, and high school are not quite fundamentally sound. To me, when you come out of high school, you understand that kids they aren't gonna quite be that quite fundamental. But when you leave a 4-year school, you go to college for 4 years, and you get them out of college, and you come into pro ball, you should be already fundamentally sound. So that is whereby. We don't have to waste time worrying about the fundamentals of it, because you already have that. But there's kids I've seen come out that they're a little lacking in fundamentals, and then we got to go back and spend time with them on fundamentals, and then you hope that they'd be able to get it. Because I tell kids that when you come out, if you fundamentally sound, you don't have to worry about that part. Now you just got to worry about your next part of the game. But when you're not fundamentally sound, you got to worry about that, and then you got to try to get you caught up. But if you can get the kids at a young age, you get them at a young age and start getting them fundamentally sound, that's going to be the world of difference.
What's an example or two or something you're seeing today? Because, again, Bubba and I are our boys are growing up and playing baseball in this particular case. What are some things that our age group can work on to get better that you know that it'll help us out down the line?
You know, just trying to make sure that they all depends on what position they play. If they're infielder, just try to make them fundamentally sound. You know, just tell them, hey, listen, you got to feel every ground ball just right at you. I mean, that's the big thing. If you fund infield, outfield, same thing. Just work on some ground balls. Just make sure keep your head down. The next thing is you know where you're throwing the ball, know where you're supposed to be at all times. And because I know kids, I know young kids, they always say, well, you know, hey, I want to be just like that guy there in the big leagues. Okay, but then again, you have to understand how much work did they put in there to get to the big leagues. It's a lot of work. When they see it on TV, yeah, it's all glamorous and it's all, you know, hey, yeah, oh, yeah, I can do that. No, no, no. You got to put it in the work first. And you better think like this. How many ground balls do they think that an infield take during the course of his years of playing? Outfield, the same thing with outfielders. You know, how many fly balls, how many ground balls do they take? And it's just like repetition. The more you take, the better you're going to get. And I know sometimes, it's, you know, it get a little boring and, you know, so I'm, no, but it's going to help you in the long run. Because as you get older, it's going to get easier.
No doubt about it. And that very fact of when you're talking about that repetition, and that would also help. That would also help the experience, right? I mean, you think about when you were talking about the speed of the game. If I'm not kosher, if I'm not clear on fundamentals, and I'm kind of like you're talking about thinking about it, and you have to, like you were talking about, when you're talking about how you had to be fundamentally sound to the point of where it's reaction. It's not even, you're so experienced and so knowledgeable about the way the ball is going to come to you, or you have an idea. In other words, if I'm a shortstop, I'm going to have an idea of the way the ball is going to break and all that kind of stuff because of the fact that I've had ground ball after ground ball. But if I go out there raw, it doesn't matter how much talent you have. And I think that's one thing you made a good point of, the individual work. People see SportsCenter and they see, oh my gosh, did you see that great play that Butch Davis made on the ball? And they don't realize that you've taken thousands and thousands and thousands of balls over your career from all the way back to middle school, junior high, to the present time.
It is. And you know, and as kids get, especially when kids younger and as they get older, listen, if your kids, just tell them, hey, then you get a routine. Get a routine and do a routine every day. I mean, and I see infield, they may take 15 ground balls straight up, 15 ground balls to the back end. 15 ground balls on a reverse pivot, maybe some ground balls coming in on them, but they develop a routine. Just like I'll tell guys about hitting. When you come to the cage, you need to have a routine. Don't just come in the cage and hit. Come in the cage with a routine. Do that each and every day. It doesn't mean 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You may come in and take 20 swings off a tee. But have a routine every single day and know what you're trying to do. Don't just hit, but know what you're trying. You want to hit line drive, work line drives. That's what you want to do. Fielding ground balls. Hey, same thing, ground balls. I want to make sure I'm down low, watch the ball in my glove. I take about 15, 20 of them. Get my backhand, same thing. Get my my reverse pivot, the same thing. Some balls coming in. But do the same thing, a routine. Okay. If you do that every single day, you'll be all right.
You know, we talk about basketball. We talk about gym rats, guys. It was the first one there, the last one to leave. I have a friend of mine. He'll kill me for telling a story not because it's a bad story, but one of my good friends from high school, Mark Rayner, his dad would pitch to him. I remember so many times I was working at Burger King in Williamston, and I was working, and Mark was working there on the field. You know, he was taking batting practice from his dad. He was an outstanding player. He could play. I mean, the guy could play any position on the field at that level. And he ended up going to double-A ball in Reading for the Phillies. And I was hoping he could make the Phillies organization, because that just goes to show you the hours and hours. He had the talent to make it all the way. But the very fact, like you talked about, I mean, he put the time in, but it's still, you had to also have some lucky breaks, right? I mean, he was putting in I don't even know how many hours, but there was a trip to Germany that we went the summer of 1990. He stayed for Legion Ball, a whole bunch of stuff he gave up for his dream.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like I said, you know, you just got to put in the time. And like you said, you got to have the breaks. You just got to be, you got to be at the right place at the right time. And you got to be hot at the right time. That's the way it is. And then, you know, I would tell people, hey, listen, once you get that foot in the door, keep it going. Don't look behind you, because there's always someone back there right there on your tail. But it's hard work. But I tell you what, though, and the one thing that kept me going was the fact that when I got to the big leagues, I got a chance to get a taste of what the big league life is like, and it just kept me going. I mean, because that first cup of coffee, once you get it, you're gonna want to work even harder so that you can get back to the big league. They always say it's easy to get to the big leagues, but it's harder to stay.
Right, and that was there any players that you remember that gave you some good advice, some funny stories you can tell us from the major leagues?
No, I know. I just, you know, my first time there with Kansas City, Amos Oles, you saw, we tried to, you know, tell me about certain, how to play certain guys in outfield. Hal McCray was also there. I used to sit next to him, and because he was DHing, and he would tell me, say, "Butch, watch this. I'm gonna go up there. I'm gonna show you what I'm gonna sit on, and I'm gonna show you what I'm gonna do." And it was amazing how patient he was. You know, he'd tell me, "This guy here, he loved to throw me that little first pitch fastball here, and then he'll come out with a breaking ball here." But he said, "Watch this. I'm gonna sit on the breaking ball," and he would do it. He would literally go up there. I mean, he would hit it. He was scalded about whether he got a base hit or not, but he knew what he was doing. He was a very smart man when it come to hitting. And I used to just sit there and just try to pick his brains. That's all I did. I used to just listen to him talk, because I knew one day that I just wanted to be able to sit there and watch the game and learn. And just sit by him, and just I try to sit with people that would talk and learn the game, and that's what I did with him. I just sit there and just listen to him. I mean, there was a lot of other players that I sit there and listen to them talk. I didn't say anything. I just listened to them, because I knew they had a lot of knowledge. Even when I was coaching with the Minnesota Twins, I tell you, two coaches that they had there that I just used to sit and listen to. I didn't have to say anything. Rod Carew and Tony Oliva. Uh-huh. I used to sit there in the cage. I mean, I'm the outfield guy, and they in the cage hitting. So if I didn't have guys in the outfield I'm doing some work with, I'd be in the cage with them. I just sit there and just listen to them. That's all I would do. Just listen. I didn't have to say anything. I'd just listen to them.
How about you? Speaking of Rod Carew, man, that guy, one of my favorite things of baseball is the running game, as far as when you're talking about the running the bases. And that guy, I mean, I still believe he holds the record for stolen bases, right, Rod Carew?
No, I think that Ricky Henderson.
I'm sorry, Ricky Henderson. I was thinking of both of them. But, yeah, with Ricky Henderson and Rod Carew, two guys that I love so much with the game and with the – that's an element of the game, I think, that is, to me, underrated. I think that it should be used more. But I guess I'm more of a risk taker when it's on the bases than some. But I love to see a stolen base. It's something very – do you have any memories of were you able to do that in your career?
Yeah, I you know, my first year in A-ball in Fort Myers, Florida, I think I stole – what was it, 40 – I had stole one point in time. I think I stole 42 straight bags without getting thrown out. Wow. Yeah, I think I stealing about maybe 44 out of 47, something like that. Yeah, I mean, that was part of my game, running. That was part of my game, and like I said, even when I was a rover and I was doing base running, and I really talked to them about base running. I talked to them about how you can win a game without getting a hit, getting a walk, reading the ball in dirty bands in second base. Guy next nick the hitter, get him over without base hit. When you're third base with less than two outs, all of a sudden, there you go, got a fly ball to outfield, sack, flag, run, score. I said, that's how you win ball games. I said, if you go back over the years, I said, I guarantee if you go back over the course of your season, think about how many games you can lose on the bases. I said, I'm telling you, go back and say, I tell them, you may end up losing about 10 games on the bases, base pad, because you just completely messed up. People think the base running, really, base running, I guess in a lot of ways, people say it's a lost art. But when you're fundamentally sound, you win a lot of games.
No question. That's something that I think Cliff Godwin, East Carolina, Bubba, is very good. I'm going to pitch it to you now, Bubba. But Cliff Godwin's very good with the running game and hit and run and stealing and with squeezing and one question, and then I'm going to pitch it to you, Bubba. One quick one is, did you ever steal home?
Nope. I came close to it. I never get. I was in A ball Fort Myers to got the guy that was a big first base guy named Bob Ferris, and I was at third base, and my manager. Oh God, I can't think of his name in it, but he was at that. And I told him, I said, listen, hey, I think I can steal home. He said, well, you can do it. Go home and try it. And so when I broke, but he's supposed to, the hitter, Bob looked down there. I thought he gave him the take. And as I started running, I was almost, and I slowed up because the guy swung. He was swinging. I said, oh no. And I said, oh no. I said, I'm not doing that again. I said, I'm not doing that no more. But I could have made it because I had timed them. I timed the guy on the mound. He was a left-handed pitcher. You're real slow to the plate, and I had already creeped off third base with people playing back. And I said, I can do this. And soon I took off. All of a sudden, I was running, and I looked at the hitter, and he was standing there. And I slowed up, and then he swung. I'm like, okay, nope, I won't try that again.
Well, it's kind of shifting gears. I think it was 2008 that you were inducted into the East Carolina Hall of Fame. So, and talk about that honor.
boy, that was great. I was really happy just to be selected. Nervous, but anytime you receive an honor of any type, it's such a thrill. Just to be able to know that that people think highly of you and they really appreciate what you did in the past.
Is there? Let me ask you this. We'll put you on the spot. As far as baseball, do you know, Tom? Are there guys that you think that should be in the Hall of Fame for East Carolina that are not in there now?
Well, I always thought that Billy Best should be in there, and they found to put him. Put them in there. I was like, I think Raymond Stein, I still appreciate what he did when he played. And I'm hoping that maybe they might at least put him to a vote. I don't know if he had been considered or if they had voted on him or not, but the way he played, he was very professional. He played the game right and played the game hard. So I'd like to see him get in there. Because I know Bob Patterson, he was a pitcher. I know he's in there. I know Billy Best is in there. I'm trying to think. During my era, during my time, was there anybody else that got in there? And I don't think they were.
Well, I guess to be fair, that's the way that it's I guess that, to be fair, that being the Hall of Fame, there's not going to be, unfortunately, you have to, I guess, stand out in a certain way or certainly break some records or your batting average. I don't know. What did they, what was it, did they tell you what put you in the Hall of Fame?
I think right now with me, I still hold a record for triples at East Carolina. Yeah.
So that's one of the things you always look at first. I think is records, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I'm thrilled that I was selected. It was a shocker, but I'm just gonna enjoy it.
It's a huge honor, and I know you well deserving it. Bubba wanted me to ask you about your family. He said to ask you about your family.
I'm married. I've been married for 30. That wife can kill me if I forget. About 34 years now. I got a grandson and I got a granddaughter, and I got a son. I got a son and a daughter, and I got two grandkids. One, my granddaughter is 9, and my grandson is 3.
But I want to remind you, a PSA announcement: next week is Valentine's Day, so don't forget that.
Oh, come on now. I'm not going to forget that.
I don't want you in the doghouse, Butch.
Hey, I've been in the doghouse once because when I was dating her, I decided that one Valentine's Day, I didn't give her anything. I didn't even give her a card.
I was in the doghouse
for about 2 weeks.
And good players learn from their mistakes, right?
That's right. And I said, that'll never happen again.
Speaking of fundamentals, you practice that enough to know that make sure you get cards, candy, flowers. For my radio show, I was doing some show prep and read this morning where a guy gave a woman a whole box of the iPod, I'm sorry, K-Pods. And she didn't even own a coffee machine. So,
well, he better go out and buy a coffee machine then.
Yeah, exactly. You get the worst gifts for Valentine's Day. So,
yeah, I'm already ahead of that game. I already got her gift already.
There you go. I knew you would. That's why you're a Hall of Famer, for sure. And I'm sure she sees you as a Hall of Famer. That's why she married you and stayed with you. And as far as I know now, after baseball, can we get you to come down to some games now? Whenever we can have fans again, that's a whole other show, as they say. But love to have you down in Greenville. And I have seats. You can sit anytime you want there with mine because being a former player, I can't go to all the games anyway, but I love to support the program and love for you to get back in with East Carolina. And we need more guys like you to come back. And I think the players really respect the former players, especially with the tradition that East Carolina has.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I would love to do that. And I will do that. I would definitely go to some ball games.
No doubt. We're so excited to have you. I tell you what, the time has gone by very fast. I can't believe you've been generous with your time, almost an hour. I can't believe it, but you're a lot of fun. And I'm proud to have you as a Tiger from Williamston and a Pirate. It's been an honor to have you on our show. You're always welcome. We do a show called Extra Innings where we look back at the week of games. We do a baseball podcast inside of obviously what we do here. We love baseball, what Cliff Godwin's doing, the baseball program. So we do that. I'd love to have you back on sometime this season and break down some games.
That'll be great. I look forward to it.
Appreciate it, Butch.
Thank you so much. Have a great
night.
Thank
you very much. All right, same to you all. Care. All right. Bye. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Butch Davis, ECU Hall of Famer. Very cool to have him on, Bubba, and obviously – again, with Williamston native and Greenville native. Very cool. I want to remind folks that 23 Jungle Tales is brought to you by PGX Gloves. And we couldn't do it without our good friend, Mark Minakazi. He stepped up to the plate. He even has a 23. It's any day now, Bubba. I saw that notification yesterday. I'm getting my 23 Jungle Tales T-shirt. And my kids with that wonderful logo on the screen, if you're listening to us, just you got to go pgxgloves.com. Right, Bubba? They've got everything. They have it all.
Yeah, PGX gloves. Not only do they have baseball gloves, but they have your batting gloves, personalized, customized with the colors and also names and other options. They also have football and golf gloves, swag, kind of like that logo you see there on the screen.
Love it.
And then we'll show you the purple and gold version of that maybe later on the show later on this evening, but tremendous logo for one, but then some of the gear that Kaz has his logo on, and then also the 23 Jungle Tales and the Sports Objective logo.
No doubt, we appreciate all that people are doing. In fact, Mark Minakazi, we got a big announcement tonight. If you're watching this live, we'll be back tonight at 7 o'clock. A lot of great action, of course. The Super Bowl, we're not talking about, we're talking baseball now, but the Super Bowl is Sunday for all of you that didn't know, they're under a rock. But we have two good guests about that and so much more. We got a big announcement. We'll make it the beginning of the show, right, Bubba? So make sure that you join us for that. It's going to be a great, I know we have Mike Yam for the NFL Network, and we also have Biscuit, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Devon Clay Brooks, and I look forward to talking to him about the Super Bowl experience and everything that goes into it as a player. Yes, that was, almost 20 years ago now, but still, and back in the early 2000s, a lot goes on during those 2 weeks in terms of media obligations and so forth, even though he wasn't a Warren Sapp or Derek Brooks or some of those high-profile players on that team. He was a very young player in the league at that time.
But he got a firsthand look at everything that goes on, and really look forward to hearing from Biscuit about the Super Bowl experience as a player.
It'll be good to catch up with him. It's been a while since we've had Biscuit on, so definitely maybe he can make some biscuits for us, and we'll have some fun breaking bread with him for sure. Thank you so much to our great guest, and we appreciate Butch Davis from 1978 to 1980, a part of 23 Jungle Tales, brought to you by, again, pjxgloves.com. Go there and buy everything. And by the way, don't forget to use a promo code. It has to be capital letters, ECU. And when you put capital letters ECU in the promo code, you get 25% off your order. And go and do that right now. You're getting ready. Hey, it's right now. I'm sure they're going to have a great big farm league, maybe little league, whatever the case may be, your kid is. They've got the best gear around. Again, pgxglot.com, and they can customize it. So if there's something you're looking for, it's special to honor your son or daughter, maybe for baseball or softball, whatever the case may be, whatever level they're playing, then just go to pgxglob.com. You can talk to Mark Minakazi, a baseball guy who's making baseball products and so much more, and we appreciate his support of the program. All right, this has been 23 Jungle Tales, a part of the Sports Objective right here. And as always, go Pirates!
You've been listening to 23 Jungle Tales on the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates. All these interviews and our other content can be seen on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. The audio can be heard anywhere you listen to our show, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show. Go Pirates!